Bob Howe, musician and Australian country music Hands of Fame inductee. Very good morning.
Good morning, Pav. How are you doing there?
Yeah, very well, thanks. It's nice to be able to pay tribute to the great man.
It is. Dear Frank Ifield, a fantastic entertainer, sadly no longer with us, but he's left behind a great legacy of music.
When did you first meet Frank?
I met Frank in 1982 in Melbourne. And I was playing with a wonderful singer by the name of Donna Fisk. And we just put a new band together, and the agents rang up out of the blue and said, we've got Frank Ifield coming to Victoria. Would the band consider working with him as his backing band for a weekend? And we thought, yeah, well, that's a dream come true for me, because I was aware of all of Frank's hits, having been born in England myself and grown up with that sort of music. And it was just wonderful, because I got to play the harmonica at the beginning of I Remember You when he sang it, and we had a wonderful time. And then a couple of years later, he came back again and he asked for us in particular. And well, I said, yeah, that's great. And I got to know him a little better the second time. And I was just about to go on a round the world trip. And Frank said, oh, look, if you're coming to England, come and work for me. Just off the cuff like that. He said, I've got a band and you'd be a great asset to the band. And I thought, well, that's nice. So I went off on my round the world trip and in 1984. And then I actually sent him a postcard. I was in America and I thought, I'm going to be in England soon. I'm going to see what happens. So I sent him a postcard. By the time I got to England, he'd been calling my grandma's number, because that's where I was staying to start off with. And he'd been trying to get hold of me and waiting for me to arrive. And he came around and picked me up and said, come and see my show, see if you like it and see how you go. And my grandma lived in a village of Hill Morton in the town of Rugby in England. Very, very old-fashioned village in this tiny little crescent. And Frank turned up to pick me up driving his Rolls Royce.
Because he was a big deal in England, wasn't he?
He was so much so that like my family didn't really understand me being a musician. It was nobody else in the family had ever been a musician. And whatever success I'd had up to that point didn't seem to matter. But the minute I mentioned I'm going to work for Frank Ifield, that was like, wow, he's a huge star.
Yeah, well, he had four number one hits in England, which is a pretty phenomenal effort in the early 60s, I would have thought, for someone from the Antipodes.
It was. Well, from anywhere, really. He was the first artist based in Britain by that time who had three number ones in a row. The only other person that ever did that was Elvis at that time.
Do you think he paved the way for other Australian artists that came after him?
I believe so, yes, because he was encouraged. His success must have encouraged other people to give it a go. And in fact, later in Frank's life, when after he stopped singing for a while, he was still encouraging talent. He created an award called the Frank Ifield International Spur Award here in Australia, which each year he would give to an artist he felt could benefit from that sort of exposure that he had as a young man.
Did any of them do any yodeling?
Yes, they did, actually. A young guy by the name of Wayne Horsburgh is a fantastic yodeler, and Frank had a big influence on his style.
Yeah, well, when I think of yodeling, Frank's one of the last great yodelers of the world, that's for sure. I believe the Queen Mother was a bit of a fan of yodeling as well.
She was indeed. In fact, when Frank was trying to get his hits going in the first place, it was a bit of a bone of contention, because his manager said, oh, no, don't yodel. That'll ruin your career. You know, stop doing that, because Frank had success in Australia as a yodeler before he went back to England. And they said, no, don't yodel, whatever you do. So it was not until I Remember You that he managed to sneak a bit of falsetto in. But which wasn't real yodeling, but eventually on the B-side of his second big hit single, Lovesick Blues, and on the flip side, She Taught Me How to Yodel, double A-side it was, he really got the yodeling going and people recognised him for that, but the Queen Mother loved it. And Frank was doing a Royal Variety appearance at the London Palladium, and the Queen Mother was in the audience, and his manager was still saying, no, whatever you do, don't yodel. He'd got to do his songs. And then a note came backstage, and it was from the Queen Mother, said, Dear Frank, I'm paraphrasing, but yeah. please will you yodel for me?
I'm guessing the manager didn't step in then.
No, that was it.
Manager was overruled by the Queen Mother.
That's right.
Don't mind that. What was he actually like on stage? Was he a good performer?
He was incredible. He had a charm and a personality that was, which he had in off stage as well. The reaction from his fans was always incredible. He always had time for the fans, and on stage he was a very generous performer, and just natural. And the audience loved him for it. And I say generous. He used to ask me to do a little instrumental feature in the middle of his show when I was working with him, and not just like as a support act, but right in the middle of his show. And he'd come back on and he'd get the audience to give me an encore. You know, it wasn't like he was just a great personality.
He was a good looking fellow. Was he a bit of a heartthrob in his day?
Oh, definitely. The ladies had their eye on him, and that didn't hurt his career at all, I don't think.
Look, one thing you mentioned before about how he gave a bit of a helping hand to some up and coming bands. One of those bands we should mention, of course, went on to pretty big things. A band called the Beatles that he performed with. Tell us what the connection there was.
Well, what happened was the Beatles were just getting going. They had they were about to record "Love Me Do," and they had an agent by the name of Arthur Howes, no relation to me, and he wanted to get the Beatles on some shows that were touring, and he wanted to get them on to Frank Ifield's show because he was a hot ticket at the time, and so they get more exposure. So he sent them down to a place called Peterborough in England to do a couple of shows, and they turned up. And at that stage, they were pretty rough and ready. They'd been to Hamburg. They were, you know, sort of still wearing the leather jackets and being quite loud. But Frank saw something. He liked their personalities and the music, so he agreed to have them on opening his show. Unfortunately, it didn't go down that well with his audience, and the local reviewers said that they thought they were a bit on the loud side. So, but it got them onto some bigger tours.
Did they remember him for the help he gave them?
Yes, they did. In fact, there's a quote just recently, Paul McCartney saying that he helped them in their early days, and they did like there's a recording that they did in Hamburg of a very rough recording, must be said, but you can hear them having a go at "I Remember You."
That was produced by Bert Camford, wasn't it?
It was around about the same time that they recorded with Bert Camford, yes, and with Tony Sheridan in Hamburg.
Now, he had a pretty serious operation in the 80s, and it affected his ability to sing, kept him out of the business for quite some time. But then he came back. Did you play with him when he recommenced his career?
I did a few times, yes. What happened, Frank put together a show called, it was based on his career. And it was him remembering all of his career and performing some of his hits. So it was like partly spoken and partly sung. And it was a great show for the audience. It was more intimate. It was like a theatre show where he told his life story and punctuated with the music.
How many records did he release?
Oh, I haven't got an exact number of that, but there were a couple of, well, at least two or three dozen albums. And hundreds and hundreds of songs that he left behind.
When he recommenced his career, did he take it back to the UK?
Yes, he did. He took that show on the road, took it back to England with sharing the stage with different people, including one of the recipients of the Frank Ifield Award, a lady named Nikki Gillis, and also they toured with Keith Potka, and they called the show. Yes, from the Seekers, but it was combining both their careers, right, as a theatre show.
And did they get good crowds in England when they were touring around?
Yes. Right to the very end, Frank was so popular over there. I had other things to do with him in his later years, including his website. So I saw a lot of the fan mail that came through, and he was selling out shows and was popular right to the end.
And he had a bit of a TV career as well, didn't he, at one point?
Yes, he did several things. Before he went to England, while he was in Australia, he appeared on lots of Australian TV shows, including Campfire Favourites. And I think he was actually, that was the first weekly Western programme, as they called them.
And I believe he would have met lots of big stars, I would have thought, in England. Who were some of the people that he rubbed shoulders with?
Oh, he was. He shared the management with the Shadows and Cliff Richard, so that they were very pally in the early 60s. I think they used to go to holidays together in Portugal and things like that, which sounds like one of Cliff Richard's movie plots. And Frank did a similar sort of thing. He had a movie called Up Jumped a Swagman back in the 60s.
How did that go down, that movie? Was it any good? Have you seen it?
I have seen it. What would you say? It's a product of its time. It hasn't aged very well, sadly. But it's a bit of a collector's item. That one it occasionally crops up very late at night on TV.
What do you think his legacy will be?
Well, a huge part of his legacy is obviously the music. His music, especially those three. Four number one hit records, and I Remember You is going to be a lasting memory for a lot of people. And he's been remembered over the years. He's was inducted into the Australian Country Music Roll of Renown, which is the highest honour of Australian country music. He's in the ARIA Music Hall of Fame. He was an OAM, so he certainly made his mark there. But I think probably his legacy will be all the people that he touched along the way, because, as I said before, he was a generous man, a charming man, and he had time for everybody. He was genuinely interested in people, either the people that he worked with or the fans that came to see him. And I think that's what people will remember on a personal level.
I think one of the things that impressed me was a lot of the songs he had hits with were actually cover versions, but he had this ability to put his own stamp on the songs that he recorded.
That's true. In fact, all three of his first three hits in a row were cover versions. I Remember You was is known as a jazz standard, but actually came from the movie The Fleet Scene. Dorothy L'Amour sang it in the movie. And then The Lovesick Blues was Hank Williams. It goes back before Hank Williams, but is recognised as one of Hank Williams' biggest hits. And The Wayward Wind, another standard. So, but yeah, when you hear Frank's version, you tend to forget the previous versions. It's just you think, well, that's it. That's the definitive version, especially I Remember You.
Knowing that you were so close to him and he was a good friend of yours, it must be a great loss for you. So it's nice to be able to get together on the radio and to talk about the career of Frank Highfield this morning. So I appreciate that very much, Bob.
Thank you very much, Pav. Yes, he was a great friend and we'll miss him terribly. But we've got that music to listen to.
Bob, thanks a lot.
You're welcome. Take care. Bye-bye.
Bob Howe there, musician and Australian country music Hands of Fame inductee and someone who played with Frank Ifield for many years. If you've got any questions you would like, or if you might have seen Frank Ifield performing, love to hear from you this morning, or you've got memories of him, 1300 800 222. I Love the Summer Is Over, someone suggests. Bill also wanted to say that he was on the Ed Sullivan Show, Frank Ifield, so that was a pretty good effort. He did a bit in America. I think he got played at the Grand Old Opry as well, I think, at one point. Mal wanted to know, how come we remember all the words to Frank's songs? I think just because they're part of the Australian consciousness, aren't they? Frank Ifield and his wonderful songs. Apparently Rod played the interview with him the other day and he was dating the same girl as Paul McCartney at one point, and apparently Paul wasn't very happy about it. Thank you for that, Bill. Look, anybody who's got memories of Frank Ifield and some of his performances, 1300 800 222. You might just want to talk about his music or his yodeling. Give us a ring, 1300 800 222. Here's another one of Frank's songs. This is another one that was mentioned there by Bob, The Wayward Wind.
A restless wind, a restless wind that yearns to wander, and I was born the next of kin, the next of kin to the wayward wind in a lonely shack by a rail. I spent my younger days, and I guess the sound of the outward bound made me a slave to my wandering ways. On the wayward wind is a restless wind, a restless wind that yearns to wander. next of kin. Ah, the next of kin to the wayward wind. Oh, I met a girl in a border town. I vowed we'd never part. Though I tried my best to settle down, she's now alone with a broken heart. And the wayward wind is a restless wind, a restless wind that yearns to wander.
Right, originally a number one in 1955, that one for Cogie Grant, and that's Frank Ifield's version of The Wayward Wind. You could hear his voice in there. What a fantastic singer he was. What amazing control he had over his falsetto and such a deep, rich tone. Frank Ifield, sadly lost. Lovely to be able to pay tribute to him on the program this morning. If you've got any memories of seeing Frank Ifield in concert, we'd love to hear from you. 1300 800 222.
If you love country music, you'll love ABC Country.
You get a fast car.
It's Australia's home of country music. The music you grew up with.
And you'll be the captain.
All the latest country hits.
I ain't proud of all the punches I've thrown.
And emerging artists.
Because baby, we've been up
24 hours commercial free. ABC Country. It's on your DAB Plus digital radio and the ABC listener.
Apparently, the little bit of harmonica in the song we played before that one was actually a little bit of Waltzing Matilda that Frank Ifield put on the top of that song. There you go. He loved his Australian roots, that's for sure. He never forgot his hometown of Dural, where he was spent most of his time growing up, but he also moved back there, as we heard earlier in the program. G'day, Ron.
How are you?
Yeah, good, thanks. You saw Frank, did you?
Back in the late 60s, I was 20 years of age, and my father had booked a table, I think, at the Windsor Hotel in Melbourne.
Yeah.
To see Frank Ifield. He was a huge fan of Frank's, and he said to me, get your girl and come along to the cabaret. And I said, oh, okay, Dad. You know, I was a Beatles and fan and whatever.
Yeah, Frank was a bit old and a lot cool, yeah.
That's right. Anyway, we went along, and it was an unbelievable night. It was really... like, he was just superb. He entertained us. It was just fantastic. Back later in the, I think it was somewhere in the 80s, I was driving back from Toowoomba in Queensland.
Yep.
And he was getting interviewed. And they asked him, what concert did he enjoy the most? Was it Palladium or what have you? And he said, well, now, it's a funny thing. I did a show in Melbourne in the late 60s at the Windsor Hotel. And he said... and it's a memory that I always it's something that I always remember because I think it's the best night I've ever had. And he said I was at the top. He said I sang well. I did everything right. And he said the audience just reacted so well. He said they were I got an ovation on every song. People stood and danced and sang or whatever. And I went
well. I was there.
There. Yeah.
You must have had a huge thrill when you heard that. I was actually at that concert.
Yeah. Well, as I said, when I, 20-year-old bloke there, and kind of went there thinking, and got there and enjoyed it so much, and my girlfriend at the time said to me, oh, what a great night, he made it. He made the night.
Well, I'm guessing you were probably a bit of a Frank Ifield fan after that, Ron, and your girlfriend.
Well, yes. Dad was a fan. Yeah, he had his records or what have you. He loved them with a passion,
Nice one, Ron. What a great story. Thank you.
That's right.
Appreciate it. Right in Brisbane there with that story about Frank Ifield concert in Melbourne. Hello, Bob.
Yeah, this is 1964.
Mm-hmm.
We were just out from the UK, and it was a hot, steamy night at Christmas, and the six of us in this patrol jalopy went up to King's Cross. Yep. And we stumbled into the Chevron Hilton Hotel. And we were all drinking in the bar. And we could hear this music. And we climbed up the fire escape. We got into the Silver Spade room. You know, we were all pretty, you know, we had a few beers.
Yeah.
And we stood there with beers in our hand. And Frank Ifield introduced Tony Hancock, who was going to appear the following week.
Ah.
It was a few weeks before Hancock topped himself. It was a.
I heard they were friends, those two, and yeah. Very sad story, Tony Hancock. But what? So you basically snuck up and met
him. We didn't know where we've only been in the country a few weeks, you know, and we went got this old jalopy of a car. Was all the open top car, it was all banging and smoking everywhere. We all stumbled in, and the funny thing was, there was a lady that joined our group of six. We each one of us thought the other person knew the lady. She was having drinks off us, so we didn't. We all.
She's obviously scamming you there, Bob. But look, wonderful memories.
Yeah.
I'm surprised they let you in the country, mate, at all with the troublemakers like you. Hey, thank you for sharing memories. Much appreciated, George. G'day, Georgie.
Ah, good day, Pav. I know I haven't got a lot of time, so I'll be quick. I met Frank Ifield quite a number of times. The Canterbury Horse and Park RSL Club in Sydney, which is sort of an inner west sort of club, but actually supports country music, and they used to, as part of their monthly Canterbury Country concert series, one night a year, they used to have the Country Spur Awards, which was selected by Frank Ifield, where he selected an up-and-coming Australian country singer.
Yep.
And then he'd actually use his many contacts overseas in places like Britain, Europe, and even America to give them a push-along and kind of created a few, I won't say kind of major stars, but significant country stars. And just a few interesting bits of trivia. His dad was actually an aircraft engineer. And when Frank first went to Britain on one of the first jet lines of the Comet, his dad's hydraulic pump, the Ifield pump, was actually a key part of the first jet flight, the first jet plane.
There you go.
So his son actually was flying in a plane that was powered, in a sense, by kept up in the air by his dad.
Well, we should say, even though he was obviously born in England, Frank Ifield, both his parents were Australian, weren't they? And I think he worked during World War II as an aircraft engineer, as you say.
Yeah, and I met his mum quite a number of times. She's an amazing lady too, really sort of kept active well into her 80s, and was a really big influence and supporter of Frank's. And I heard him sort of, he didn't actually sing a lot, obviously, in his later years, because he had a problem with a collapsed lung that led to throat surgery that wasn't too successful. He did kind of make a bit of a comeback later on, but so I never actually saw him in his actual prime live, unfortunately. But he's a lovely, lovely man, and even set up his own little country music festival at the northwest suburbs of Sydney, in the Hills District in Gorleston, where he lived for many years.
Yeah, he has. His contribution is not only to up emerging artists, but still going around. I think there's still a number of awards that are named after Frank Ifield. Hey, thanks, Georgie. Lovely memories. Jane, g'day.
Hello, Pav. Hi. In the early 1960s, you go to a concert in Canberra. I was too young to go, really. I was only about 9. And my parents took my autograph book, though, and got his autograph. So I had it for many years, along with the Easy Beats and Rolf Harris, believe it or not, and the Beatles. But unfortunately, that precious book was stolen by an unscrupulous flatmate in the 1970s. I would have had all those precious autographs, but we were great Frank Ifield fans.
Look, he's a fantastic singer, and that connection with the Beatles as well. Gee, those signatures, I reckon, be worth a bit of money, Jane.
Oh,
so you've missed out.
They'd be worth a squillion now.
Hey, sorry to hear that. Hey, thanks for your memories. Very lucky, at one point at least, to have had Frank Ifield's signature. There, look, I've got here, according to the internet, 25 albums and 27 singles. Thank you. I've got here as well, John says, Frank Ifield was in ABC Ultimo Studios in the last 10 years and looked like just like he did in the 60s, hadn't aged at all. So, and Louise is saying, having a lovely sing-along here. Hope my neighbours can't hear me. Thank you, Louise in Redcliffe.